Jason, 33-0 the final score last night on Monday Night Football. New England Patriots are crushing teams right now, and as they improve to 7-0, I mean, it's just kind of par for the course, especially with the cupcakes they've had on their schedule earlier this year. Like, they are massacring teams right now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I think a lot of it is their defense. What the defense is doing is staggering. I was crunching some numbers this morning for a column I'm working on. I mean, their average margin of victory is 25 points. Like, that's not – and they're 7-0. You know what I mean? It's not like they're 2-5 and they had two blowouts. I mean, we're halfway through a season. The average margin of victory in the league is 11.5 points. They're 25 points a game. You know, opposing quarterbacks have a rating of 34.6. I mean, the league average is like 90. Third down conversions against them is at 14%. Like, the league average, you know, is like 50. It's just stat after stat. They've allowed 5 scoring drives all season. Okay? We've played 7 games. They've allowed 5 scoring drives. The league average is 26. They've allowed 27 offensive points scored. So this is not other teams scoring on defense, but 27 offensive points allowed. Next best is San Francisco at 57, and they've played 1 fewer game. The league average is 140. They've allowed 27. I don't care who they're playing against. Like, it's ridiculous. They're allowing 3.96 yards per play. The league average is 5.6. The next best team is San Francisco, 4.25. I mean, they're not like they've got 18 interceptions. No other team has more than 9. Now, will they regress a little bit at some point? Maybe. The rushing defense, they're allowing 4.15 yards per carry. The problem is nobody's running the ball on them because they're all getting blown out. So, like, you know, Cleveland, Nick Chubb, pretty interesting rushing attack coming up. We'll see. And then Baltimore after that with the most unique rushing attack in the league. We'll see. But, you know, Brady's 15th in passer rating, 18th in yards per attempt. Sony Michel's averaging 3.2 yards per carry, and only 2 guys on the roster have more than 20 receptions halfway into the season. But we're not talking about it because they're bludgeoning teams because of the defense. Yeah. So Mohamed Sanu will help the offense. They'd like to get an offensive lineman or a tight end. I suspect they make at least one more trade to do that. And defensively, if they stay anything close to this pace, you'd have to start talking about them as a historically significant defense. I mean, yep. This is an era where everything is incentivizing the passing game and yards and points. And, I mean, again, 5 scoring drives through 7 games.
I believe that's less than 1 per game, if my rudimentary math is correct.
Yeah.
Now, the one team that has pushed them is Buffalo, and the door was open a few times there in the second half for the Bills offensively, if they could have, you know, and that's part
done
of it.
Anything.
It's pretty good defense on the other side, but the door was open for the Bills. How close is Buffalo in that division to New England for you?
I mean, look, one thing that was clear through all the research I did this morning, New England, Buffalo, and San Francisco are far and away the best defenses in the league, and then there's a significant drop-off from that tier. Now, New England's in their own tier within that tier, but those are the two closest to them. Sean McDermott's a hell of a defensive play caller. Leslie Frazier, who's on that defensive staff, gets the secondary going as good as anybody in the league. Buffalo's going to be a tough out all the way through. I still have some reservations about Buffalo's quarterback and just the consistency of their passing game in general. But, yeah, they have the kind of equation. Like, they could play an old-school game against the Patriots and keep it close and maybe beat them, you know, whatever, 21-17 or 24-21. They've got the kind of defense that can really suffocate New England, especially as presently constructed. Let's see if they fortify the O-line and add out pass-catching tight end, which could maybe even, you know, put them more over the top. But I think we'll also learn a little bit more about New England coming up. Like I mentioned, those 2 games they have, which will test the run defense, and then they have a bye, and then I think they get Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott. I mean, not that he's great, but whatever. Dak Prescott, Patrick Mahomes. I'm trying to think who the fourth quarterback is. They get a pretty good gauntlet of four big-time quarterbacks coming out of that bye, who at least might dent that secondary a little bit. But to this point, I mean, again, we're talking 18 interceptions already and a quarterback rating against 35.6. The league average is 91.4. The next best team is San Francisco at 64.6. I mean, that's crazy.
Tell me about Mohamed Sanu. How does he fit in with the Patriots now that they've acquired him a week out from the 2019 deadline?
Yeah, I mean, he you know, kind of lost his role a little bit in Atlanta when they drafted Ridley a couple
Ridley,
years back.
Yeah.
But he's Josh McDaniels will know how to use him. Josh will look at how Kyle Shanahan used Mohamed Sanu and how he was used, you know, late in his tenure with the Bengals. You could move him around based on the height and sort of makeup of the other team's corners. You know, he can win for you in the slot. He can line up on the outside. Smart football player. He's a really good blocker, and they're going to keep running the ball there, especially if they don't completely believe in their offensive line. They're not going to put Tom Brady in a vulnerable position. Really smart football player. They know exactly what they're getting there. I think he was at Rutgers the same time as Steve Belichick. Belichick's son was there. It fits, and they don't have anybody. I mean, again, I don't know if I mentioned. I mean, they only have two guys on their roster who've caught more than 20 passes. One is Edelman, and the other one is, you know, a situational third down running back, James White. I mean, they don't have anybody on the outside catching balls for him. You know, Josh Gordon, it is what it is there. You know, he's struggled this year, and he hasn't been healthy. They're going to get their first-round pick and Kiel Harry back, you know, at some point in the next couple weeks. And, you know, that should be a boon, but sometimes rookie receivers have a learning curve. So they needed more guys, reliable targets for Tom Brady, and that's what they got. And then now if they could, you know, if the Cincinnati Bengals want to, like, wake up in the morning, look at the standings, look at their attendance figures, look at their lack of draft picks coming up, look at the age of that roster and do the right thing, then, you know, a guy like Tyler Eifert would be right up Bill Belichick's alley right now as well. If they're able to add him or an O.J. Howard type, then I think it just gives them more pieces to play with underneath. I don't know that they're going to get that true burner who could really open up for them on the outside. But maybe Josh Gordon's healthier in the second half of the year, and he provides some of that.
Jason Lackenfor is our NFL insider. CBS Sports, CBSSports.com, joins us Tuesdays on Pinder and Steinberg. San Fran gets Emmanuel Sanders from Denver. There's another unbeaten team who brings in a nice receiving piece. How does Sanders fit, rather, with the Niners?
I reported on the NFL Today over the weekend that the 49ers were as motivated as any team in the league to add a receiver. They were not being fooled by their record. They know that they don't have, besides the tight end Kittle, they didn't really have anybody, and the fullback Juszczyk, they didn't have anybody who could win for them in the passing game. Pettis has been banged up. It's been bad. And they've become predictable. And Kyle Shanahan, look, they were in on Mohamed Sanu as well. They didn't want to give up a second-round pick. And I understand that. San Francisco doesn't have a winning pedigree. They're not playing from a position of strength, and they don't have a 44-year-old quarterback or whatever. The Patriots do, and they don't care about trading the 64th pick of the draft, nor should they. But, you know, for San Francisco, it's a little different. So they hedge their bets. You know, Sanders is older. Sanders has had more injury concerns, but Sanders, I think, when healthy and right, is a better player than Sanu, and you're also renting him. Sanu's got another year on his deal. You know, this is probably a pure rental. If you let Sanders leave, you get a compensatory pick of some sort in all likelihood a year later. But I get it. They needed more toys to play with, and I'm not sure that they're done. I mean, I think they're looking at some spare parts on other teams, like a guy like Tavon Austin, who Dallas has never really figured out how to use him, nor did really the Rams. But he's got that speed. He's got that twitch. You look at what a Kyle Shanahan did with Taylor Gabriel in Atlanta. Now, Gabriel doesn't see the field much for the Bears. The Bears don't seem to be going anywhere. And they signed Cordarrelle Patterson in the offseason, who does a lot of that same stuff as Gabriel. You know, might they be able to pry him away for a 4 or 5 or something like that? I know they'd like to add one more piece there, a twitchy guy, maybe a small guy you put in the slot. He's trouble for bigger corners. There's certain body types that really work in Kyle's offense and that he gravitates to. And because, Pettis and Goodwin are banged up so much, I can see them trying to dip their toes back in that water a little bit too.
What else are you hearing deadline-wise? We're a week away. It sounds like receivers are the big trade chips in 2019. What are some of the other things that you've been sniffing around on that you can share with us?
Yeah, sure. Again, if the Bengals want to do business, there's six guys who teams would give them good value for. Five now, and Dalton would be more of an off-season trade. It's not a lot of contending teams are looking for quarterbacks right now. It's hard to integrate systems and language and terminology and all that, and Dalton has not been good. But I don't think Dalton will be there in 2020 either. But, I mean, A.J. Green, Tyler Eifert, Carlos Dunlap, Geno Atkins, Drake Kirkpatrick, there's legitimate interest in all those players. We'll see if Mike Brown wants to live in the real world, or if they want to, you know, pretend that trades don't happen in football, and that pretend that they're not a team that's probably going to win no more than one or two games, even with all those guys making all that money on their roster and getting older. The Washington Redskins keep rebuffing requests for Trent Williams and Ryan Kerrigan. Might that change by Tuesday? I don't know, because they're not being rational about this either. They're being personal and petty and selfish. But for the good of the franchise, they need to trade those players. And they could get – I mean, they'd get a one and something else for Trent Williams. And I think they could get a three that maybe moves up for Kerrigan. They need picks. I don't think Arizona trades Patrick Peterson, but people will keep calling. The Broncos aren't done either. Between Derek Wolf, Von Miller, and Chris Harris, they're going to get calls on their defensive players. At the end of the day, I think they move at least one of those guys, and maybe two, because Wolf and Harris are unrestricted free agents who won't be re-signing there. I think I could see the Philadelphia Eagles getting Chris Harris. Howie was in on Patrick Peterson a year ago, their GM Howie Roseman, he was in on Jalen Ramsey. He was in on Minka Fitzpatrick. I could see him doing something for Chris Harris. The Saints really want to add a receiver. They'd love to make that A.J. Green. We'll see if that happens. The Saints also looking at tight ends and corners. I'm trying to upgrade there. Baltimore is trying to add pass rush, but it's very limited by its cap situation right now, and they don't want to go overboard dealing picks. But like a Ryan Kerrigan, I think, is somebody who they would – you know, be all over if possible. So we'll see. And then there's always one or two things that sort of happen out of the dark. Oh, and Atlanta's looking to move more salary. I mean, Vic Beasley, for the money he's making, people don't want. But if Atlanta picks up a couple million of it, maybe. You know, their center, mm-hmm. Alex Mack, is another guy who there's some interest in, but they might have to be willing to eat some salary there as well. And also with Trufant, their corner, who hasn't lived up to that contract, but there's such a need for corners. But again, they may have to take a little bit of pain now to get some payroll and cap flexibility down the road, and to add some draft picks, which they're going to need because they're not close and they're going to have a new coach next year. And Matt Ryan's not getting any younger.
Okay. And what are you hearing on Antonio Brown? Because you reported a couple of days ago that there's a chance that this guy could be back after the deadline. Yeah?
Yep. And especially if A.J. Green isn't moved and a couple of these teams get stuck in about not trading, you know, Tyler Eifert and guys who can help you in your passing game, then, yeah, I think he does get signed. I think somebody gives him a vet minimum deal that's going to be absolute peanuts over the final 5-6 weeks of the season. And they'll put a bunch of incentives in there for if we win the playoff game, if we win a Super Bowl with you, if we win a championship game with you. So there'll be a carrot hanging out there for him, and they'll say, you know what, we don't have to manage this guy for all of a training camp or all of a regular season. You know what I mean? We got him. We're going to have him shot out of a cannon for 8 weeks, and we think he'll be on his best behavior, and if he's not, then we literally owe him nothing. There's just too many good teams that are doing too much work on receivers, that are doing too much homework on him, that unless the NFL intervenes and suspends him, somebody's going to sign him in the next 3-4 weeks. I really think so.
With Jason Lacanfora, our NFL insider, CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Just a couple final ones for you, and I thought you made a really interesting point on your insider piece on CBSSports.com a little earlier over the weekend. And you know, we've been talking about the Falcons a lot this year and how poor their year's been. They get crushed by the LA Rams, and LA's gone out. They've gotten Jalen Ramsey, and you see some similarities between the Falcons Ravens and the Rams, and more so where the Rams are trending towards right now.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, sometimes you fool yourself into thinking you're that one player away, and you're not, and you think you're extending a window, and you're not. Now, the biggest difference is Sean McVay is a master tactician. He's a master leader. His emotional intelligence is off the charts. His X's and O's are off the charts. And that's not Dan Quinn. I'm sorry. They're just different people, different coaches. And so I think Sean McVay is able to do more with less. But I just look at them, man, and I know they destroyed Atlanta this weekend. And, you know, Dante Fowler had his, you know, the one big game he has like every 6 weeks. And then you wonder where he is for a month. But I don't know, man. I look at that. They need a left tackle. They need a center. They're probably going to need a guard in the next year. The running game with Gurley's not the same. We can call it whatever we want or pretend that, you know, it is, but it's not, and they can't run the offense through him anymore. Without that, some of the good receivers who at times look great have a harder time looking great, and the quarterback, the expectations of living up to that contract are very real, and it gets in your head, and it's hard to shake. And then defensively, I don't know who the other corner is opposite Ramsey, you know? They don't really have any linebackers that you have to worry about. And they don't have outside pass rushers. So, I mean, Aaron Donald can only do so much. And then you've got Russell Wilson in that division. You've got the 49ers who are legitimate. And Arizona will be maybe the best team to lose a division. You know what I mean? Like, Arizona might end up winning seven games with a rookie quarterback and a rookie coach and being, like, whatever, 7-8-1 and still finishing last. And if they were in another division, they'd be much higher. So I just worry about what they've done there. They got 55% of their cap in five players next year. It's hard. The margins are a lot different when you had, you know, Donald on peanuts and Goff on peanuts and Gurley on peanuts. Like, those days are over. And you're not getting those top 10 draft picks anymore. In fact, you're not even getting first-round picks for five straight years. I think they will remain a good team because of McVay and some individual talent they have, but I don't know that they're going to get the kind of reward that they need given what they gave up for this player and then once he starts making $19 million a year.
Yeah. And a final thought for you, my friend, that you probably don't need to spend a whole lot of time on it, but the week starts in a couple days. I mean, I guess the question should not be set us up for Minnesota and Washington, but more how many points do you see Minnesota winning by?
Yeah, I mean, the Redskins let me down by not losing by 10 or more last week, but that was only because that game was played in a monsoon. I mean, that was
yep. You
had biblical conditions there in D.C., and the field was trash. Little different, short week. Highest flying offense in the league the last 3 weeks. Kirk Cousins looking to shove it down their throat. A banged up Adrian Peterson. Not much they can count on. I think it'll be a much bigger revenge game for Cousins than AP. I think that Vikings defense is absolutely suffocating, especially at home. And that game's in Minnesota, is it not?
Yes.
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, we will get a reprise of what we had last night. That game will be over at halftime.
Good stuff, my friend. It is always a pleasure. We will talk to you again on Friday. Thank you, Jay.
You got it. Thank you. Have a good one.